rotten table lay on its side. What used to be glass walls appeared to have shattered, letting the vines spill out from a neighboring corridor. Behind the mastermind were more sweeping views of the city, covered in fire and smoke. The beast was nearly twice as tall as any of the operators, but it seemed to cower at their approach. Using claws, it tugged on the tendrils of the network, undoubtedly sending messages for help.
"Ain't no one coming to help you, sweetheart," Ace said.
"This looks like the heart of the comms network," Dohai said. "But unless that thing is the Prophet, I don't see anything else."
"This hunk of meat is the Prophet?" Rico asked.
Corin squinted from where he stood near the entrance of the room, tugging on a few of the red vines.
"No, this is just a normal mastermind."
He held the vine.
"It's scared of us. That's why it's sending all these messages."
"You sure?" Fitz asked.
"Yes, the Prophet is not one of these organic computers," Corin said.
"Fine," Fitz said. "Kill it." The group opened fire on the beast, aiming for its head. Bullets plunged into the flesh, drawing blood wherever they pierced. The monster writhed, pulling hard on the vines, backing away from the gunfire. One of its eyes popped, viscous fluid leaking out, and the monster let out a pained roar. It fell backward, arms still flailing, and broke the windows behind it. Beaten back by gunfire, the mastermind plummeted out, snapping vines. A moment later, Dohai heard a sickening smack against concrete.
"Let's move," Fitz said.
He pointed toward the corridor they hadn't yet explored to their right. Did the Prophet go that way before they had arrived? Were the other new gods leaders waiting for them? Before they moved, voices filled the first corridor where they had come from. Spearhead hobbled into the room, shutting the door behind them quietly. Nielsen signaled that they had seen more contacts. Those voices grew louder, permeating under the door. There was no mistaking their rasping, crackly words. Chimeras were on their way. Dohai tensed, aiming his rifle at the door, waiting for them to burst through. But the beasts went quiet. Corin sniffed at the air.
"I smell something sharp. Like gunpowder. Except
TNT, Dohai said in a low voice.
"They're setting explosives.
Just like the rest of the city," Fitz said.
"We have to get out of here."
They ran down the new corridor to their right. A few lone variants lurched at them from the shadows. They dispatched them quickly, then ran into a stairwell. Dohai looked down the winding stairs from the fifth floor. Monsters had reached the second floor and were climbing quickly. A few let out hunting cries when they saw Dohai. He ducked back into the hall.
"We can't get down that way."
A low explosion boomed behind them. Wood splintered, the doors to the conference room breaking. Smoke billowed down the corridor. Fitz signaled for the team to take firing positions. As soon as the first dark shadow moved within the smoke, Ghost and Spearhead unleashed a fusillade of gunfire. But unlike the variants before, this time their enemy fired back. Bullets punched into the walls and webbing around them. The team scrambled for cover, but there was nothing but knots of webbing and a few gurneys to hide behind.
"Keep low,"
Dohai shouted. From the smoke, collaborators emerged wielding rifles and pistols. The first few went down in a barrage of fire from Rico and Fitz, but then came the real threat. A group of chimeras in armor, gripping machine guns and wielding sawtooth swords. Their golden eyes practically glowed in the low-light environment, and they moved like professional soldiers, advancing on Team's Ghost and Spearhead. The beasts outnumbered them 3-1. They couldn't stay here. Running down the stairs back to the ground floor would be suicide too, which left one option.
"On me,"
Dohai yelled. He fired a burst of suppressing fire and then ran for the stairs, bullets searing past him. Fitz switched on the comm.
"Command, this is Ghost One. We need immediate evac, surrounded at the UMC.
There was no immediate response, and with the distant explosions, Dohai began to wonder if anyone was out there to answer.
"Command, this is Ghost One, do you copy?"
Fitz tried again. A familiar voice surged over the channel.
"Ghost One, this is Reaper One. Report your position. Over."
"Beckham," Dohai whispered.
If anyone could save their asses, it was the former lead of Team Ghost.
A thud rang out from an impact against the locked door on the rooftop, rattling the crates and debris Team Ghost had stacked against it.
"Get ready," Fitz said.
The team had already taken firing positions behind the ducts and rusted air conditioning units around the rooftop. Rico was next to Fitz behind a unit near the cornice lining the perimeter of the roof.
"Stay close to me," he said to her.
Corin sheltered beside Ace and Dohai. Nielsen propped up his rifle on a ventilation shaft, aiming at the doorway, with Toussaint crouched nearby. The roars of the beasts surrounding the building nearly drowned out the gunfire cracking through Vegas. Thuds continued on the door, each one knocking more of the stacked crates away.
"At least I got to see you one last time, Fitzy," Rico said. "If I'm going to die, I want it to be next to you."
"We're not going to die," Fitz vowed.
Shrieks of monsters from all sides of the buildings made it hard to believe his own words.
"Reaper One, Ghost One," Fitz called over the radio. "Is our evac en route?"
"Copy that, Ghost One," Beckham answered.
The line crackled with static, interspersed by gunfire.
"I'm trying to locate all members of Recon Sigma, but I called in a special favor. Hold tight."
Fitz didn't have time to guess what the favor was going to be. A pair of creatures clambered over the edge of the roof, their mouths opening to let out howls. Their muscles flexed as they leapt, and their tongues whipped over their wormy lips.
"Conserve your ammo and watch your firing zones," Fitz called out.
The rooftop was wide, but the close proximity of the soldiers made firing extremely dangerous. He switched to single shots and didn't fire until he had a clear target. The first shot thunked into the closest creature's muscled chest, knocking it off balance. The monster crashed next to the other beast that Rico dispatched with a headshot.
"Contacts!" Nielsen yelled.
All around the roof, the variants crawled over the railings. Gunfire lashed out from the two teams, taking down the first wave easily. Corin hunched, growling, waiting to join the fight with his claws. As a second wave emerged, he stood and let out a roar. Fitz fired at the blurs of diseased flesh. Each second turned into its own hellish eternity, and he resisted the urge to avert his gaze and check the smoke-clotted sky for a helo. The door to the roof access stairwell finally exploded open. Fitz turned toward it as four chimeras rushed out, slinging fire. Bullets punched into the air conditioning unit, forcing him down close to Rico, their faces nearly touching, eyes locked.
"Stay down," he said.
He switched to automatic fire, knowing it would take more than a single well-placed round to kill these creatures. Holding in a breath, he popped up and fired a burst straight into the face of the lead chimera. Another was hit by a blast that crippled its legs. Even as the two surviving beasts found cover, five more rushed out. Four ducked behind shelter immediately. The last one stood in the doorway, firing as rounds punched into its armor and flesh. Fitz only got a glimpse, but he could tell the chimera was larger than the others and wore a tattered cape along with the front of a human skull as a mask. Could he be the prophet? Rico fired from around the air conditioner while Fitz reloaded. The beast zeroed in on them, returning fire. Ace and Dohai continued to attack the monsters crawling over the edge of the buildings, while Toussaint and Nielsen provided suppressing fire to allow Fitz to select his shots. He was easily the best marksman. It was on him to take the leader down. The chimeras pushed forward, their gunfire and growls growing closer. They outnumbered Spearhead and Ghost, and the ever-present threat of the Thrall variants climbing the walls closed in. Fitz needed to make a move soon, or they weren't making it off this roof alive.
"Rico, cover me," he said.
"Wait," she began to say.
Fitz bolted toward a vent stack closer to the chimeras. From his vantage point, the flanks of two of the beasts were visible. Corin suddenly ran out to meet them, screaming,
"Elijah!"
He slammed a fist into the skull mask, shattering it. The blow knocked Elijah to the ground. Fitz used the opportunity to put a burst of bullets into the face of another distracted chimera. Another chimera turned and sprayed the vent stack he had moved behind with rounds. Fitz hunched down, bullets crashing against his position. Rico remained flat against the roof. More variants dragged themselves over the railings, snarling with rage and hunger. Nielsen and Toussaint killed a swath of them, but the monsters kept coming. They appeared to be thinner than those inside the building, clearly desperate for a fresh meal. The Chimeras were just as determined. Fitz got up to see two of them had taken down Corrin while their hulking leader advanced with a sawtoothed cutlass in hand, heading right for Rico.
"Jenny!" Fitz yelled.
She turned with her rifle, bringing it up to deflect the blow meant for her head. The impact sent her sprawling backward, her helmet thudded against the roof. Time seemed to slow as Fitz tried to find a shot. Gunfire slammed his position, one round slashing his neck, it was so close. He tried to get up again, but more bullets streaked by.
"Dohai! Ace!"
he bellowed, straining to be heard over the gunfire. The pair reacted immediately, providing cover fire for Fitz. When the Chimeras recoiled from the concerted fire, Fitz rushed the leader that Corrin had called Elijah. The grotesque half-man swung toward Rico with his cutlass, knocking her rifle from her grip. Fitz slammed into the massive creature from behind. A blow like that would be enough to knock the air out of a normal man and take him down. Not this abomination. Elijah dropped his cutlass and wrapped his arms around Fitz. Injuries from his torture in Seattle reignited, bruises and lacerations burning with agony. His teeth ground together, and he tried to kick at the Chimera as he lifted him off the ground, bringing them face to face. Only part of the skull mask remained, but the rest of the scarred face was visible. Fetid breath puffed as Elijah began to crush Fitz's ribs. Rico started to push herself up, but the creature slapped her down with its free arm. She fell back, blood gushing from her nostrils. Fitz reached for his blade, but his arms were trapped.
"I got other plans for you, Fitzpatrick," the creature said in a crackly voice.
Elijah suddenly slammed Fitz to the ground. A sharp pain swam up from his spine into the back of his skull, and his vision went blurry, blackness threatening to overwhelm his vision.
"I've been waiting for this moment," Elijah said. "The Prophet will reward me handsomely for your corpse."
"Elijah,"
another scratchy voice said. Fitz blinked, seeing a second Chimera. But this wasn't an enemy. Corrin strode over, blood gushing from multiple wounds. The half-man stood to face the Chimera, wielding the cutlass Elijah had dropped.
"So you're the traitorous heretic," Elijah said.
"This is not the path to your so-called salvation," Corrin said. "You can still join us and end this evil." "Fool!"
Elijah let out a roar and stormed toward Corrin while Fitz scrambled over to shield Rico. By the time he got to her, Corrin was swiping at Elijah with the cutlass. Elijah blocked each blow with his claws. Across the roof, Dohai, Nielsen, and Toussaint had finished off the other Chimeras and were fighting the last of the variants. "I'm okay," Rico said. "Help the others." He got up with his rifle, trying to get a clear shot on Elijah. But the creature had picked up Corrin, squeezing him and forcing the smaller Chimera to drop the cutlass. He swung Corrin toward the edge of the rooftop. Fitz put a burst into Elijah's back, knocking him forward. Corrin slammed into the railing and then fell over the side.
"No!"
Ace shouted. He let out an angry yell as he used the butt of his rifle to slam Elijah in his back. A throbbing pain still beat at Fitz's head, but he forced himself to stand. He pulled out his knife and stumbled over to help Ace. He lunged at Elijah with the blade. The creature knocked Fitz back with a swipe of his arm and scooped up his cutlass. Ace pulled out a pistol and fired at Elijah, but the bullets hardly fazed the beast. It brought the cutlass down on his wrists, severing them both in a single slice.
"No!"
Fitz yelled. The creature hit him again, knocking him backwards. Ace staggered, looking down at Fitz, while blood pumped out of both wrists. They locked eyes as Elijah swung the cutlass again, straight at Ace's neck. This time, it didn't cut all the way through, leaving Ace's head hanging partly from his neck. Elijah let out a roar that masked Fitz's own scream. Using his claws, he cut through the gristle and held Ace's severed head up, his voice rising into a war cry. Fitz reached for his knife as Elijah strode toward him.
"You're next, Fitzpatrick,"
he shouted. A flash of motion came from the railing. Corrin had climbed over. He lowered his shoulders like a linebacker ready to blitz and slammed into Elijah so hard that the Chimera went airborne, still holding Ace's head. Elijah hit the ground and turned. Fitz got up, and Rico did too, firing her rifle. Elijah erupted in a frustrated screech and then bolted away into the stairwell leading from the roof. Dohai ran over with his hatchet and blade in hand, and Corin scooped up the dropped cutlass.
"On me!" Fitz shouted.
The survivors all closed around him, preparing their weapons for the next wave. They could already hear them coming up the sides of the building. Fitz held up his pistol in one hand and his knife in the other, trembling from the shock of losing Ace. Dohai was looking around, still unaware of what had happened to the older operator.
"Where is—"
he started to yell. The chainsaw roar of an M249 cut him off. A Blackhawk rose over the rooftop, a crew chief manning the machine gun and firing into the climbing monsters. The rotor blades washed away the oily clouds of smoke rising around the building. Once it had completed a full flight around their perimeter, the crew chief stopped firing and the chopper swooped in close to the roof. The side door opened.
"Get in," Fitz said.
Rico put an arm over his shoulder and he helped her toward the bird. Once they were all inside, he stared at the blood-stained roof where the headless body of Ace lay sprawled.
"I'm sorry," Fitz choked out.
Climbing monsters continued to ascend faster toward the rooftop, driven by the scent of spilled blood. The crew chief passed out headsets to them, and Fitz turned his on.
"You okay, Jenny?" Fitz asked.
A wet sheen covered her eyes.
"Ace. He's..."
Dohai looked over.
"What happened to Ace?"
Fitz bowed his head, unable to talk. Toussaint checked over her rifle, and Nielsen peeled off some red vines still clinging to his ACU that he'd never gotten the chance to remove. Dohai slammed a fist into the bulkhead.
"I promise we will kill Elijah," Corin said through clenched fangs.
"That beast wasn't the Prophet, was he?"
Fitz managed, his voice still shaking.
"No," Corin said. "He's one of the members of the Prophet's council. But he's not the Prophet."
The primary pilot's voice crackled over their headsets.
"Master Sergeant Fitz, I'm Leon Tremblay, an old friend of Beckham's."
"Thanks for risking your neck for us," Fitz said.
He tried to hold himself together for whatever came next. The name, Tremblay, sparked a distant memory.
"You're the one who flew Beckham down to Colorado."
"That's right," Liam said.
"Beckham told me you all could use my help. I'm just sorry I couldn't make it here sooner."
Fitz wiped his forehead with the back of his hand. It came away with a mixture of sweat and blood.
"Where are we headed?"
"To Beckham's location."
"Where is he?"
"The Venetian."
Fitz looked out from the window in the side door to see pillars of massive flames ravaging the city. Black pillars of smoke blocked out the stars. Amid it all, Fitz spotted the main strip, illuminated by flames and gunfire. They had just escaped one hell, and now they were headed straight into another, missing another member of Team Ghost. 16. Smoke poured around Beckham and seeped into his lungs. The Shimog scarf he had used to cover his nose and mouth hardly helped. He coughed with each struggling breath, searching through the ember-filled atmosphere with his rifle pressed against his shoulder. His night vision goggles were worthless in the screen of black and gray, and he had resorted to using his barrel-mounted light. With his M249 saw strapped over his back, Horn carried Ruckley in his arms. She cried out in pain as he navigated the rubble, but she still managed to hold her pistol with her good arm, too stubborn to keep it holstered. The crack of gunfire burst through the roar of the flames devouring the destroyed hotels and casinos along the Las Vegas Strip. Howls shrieked through the darkness like angry banshees, and the public channels on the radios were filled with desperate calls.
"Taking fire!
Recon Bravo Eagle 4, we have to leave now! Hostiles!"
More static. More voices lost to explosions and the cacophony of the ongoing battle. Beckham knew they didn't have much time before the last of the helos took off. He could only hope that Tremblay would hold out and still be able to give them a ride. By all counts, the mission had failed, but there was one objective Beckham would not give up on. One reason he had not yet run to one of the evacuation sites transmitted to them by command.
I can't leave Timothy.
They stopped at an intersection. Somewhere past the smoke, he heard the clatter of claws against asphalt. Beckham looked over his shoulder, stifling a cough. His lungs were burning, and he had to duck low, gasping for what little oxygen remained in the scorching air. Horn was hunched low, still holding Ruckley. Sweat carved through the ash on his face. The crack of gunfire sounded to their left. Could that be Timothy? A sudden growl cut through the air to their right, and Beckham dropped low. Horn reached for his sidearm, gently lowering Ruckley in case he needed to fight. They remained frozen as the smacking and pop of variant lips sounded from behind the dark fog. Claws scratched over concrete as a pack of beasts sprinted past. The only benefit of the burning city was that the smoke and fire masked scents. Horn tugged on Beckham's sleeve, gesturing toward Ruckley.
"We have to get her out of here," Horn said. "She's not doing so hot."
She wasn't going to last much longer in the smoke, and truth be told, neither would the two operators.
"We can't leave Timothy," Beckham replied.
He had made a promise, and if he left Timothy behind, he knew that choice would haunt him like a terrible cancer eating at his mind, sending it to the dark places he had worked so hard to get past with the help of Kate and friends like Big Horn. Now he needed to be that friend to Timothy.
"You go with Ruckley and get to an evac site," Beckham said. "I'll keep searching."
"Hell no," Ruckley said. "I ain't leaving the kid either."
Horn smirked.
"I'll do whatever she says, boss."
Wasting no time, Beckham pushed onward through the rubble of the Venetian. Horn picked Ruckley up and followed through a cloud of smoke. On the other side, forms of construction equipment appeared like monstrous creatures. Small cranes and aerial work platforms were tangled in a jumbled mess outside a loading bay with semi-trucks and trailers. Part of the concrete ceiling of the bay had collapsed and crushed two of the trucks. Beckham took the long way around the docking bay. Congealed or not, the fuel inside those trucks could act as a bomb if the fire got too close. He had nearly passed the loading dock completely when he heard the pop of gunfire from inside, followed by an angry shriek. He narrowed his eyes, trying to make out movement deeper within the bay. Everything was covered in a layer of gray smoke and shadows.
"I'm going in," he said to Horn. "Keep watch with Ruckley." "Careful, brother."
Horn set Ruckley down and shouldered his M249. Beckham advanced, eyes flitting from the ceiling to the shadows of the bay. Fires burned throughout the place, chewing through debris. A sudden groan and crack sounded overhead. He dodged as chunks of the ceiling gave way, spilling rubble. Some of it hit his prosthetic hand, the embers melting the plastic where they touched and sizzling through his ACU. He hurried forward, listening for variants. Any hope of smelling their putrid stench was masked by the odor of melting plastic and fuel. Another cough tore through Beckham, this time making him double over. He tried to catch his breath, knowing the noise could also get him killed. A second hole in the ceiling formed, spilling more burning detritus. He lunged to the side, scraping his flesh and blood arm across the concrete floor. Concrete and pipes crashed to the ground behind him, cratering the floor. Then he heard the tap of claws. He braced himself, swinging his rifle up, ready for an attack. But the beasts those claws belonged to weren't headed toward him. They were going deeper into the smoke-filled dock.
"Straight after prey," he guessed.
More gunfire burst in the space, echoing. The tormented shrieks of injured variants followed. Beckham rushed forward. Behind him, another semi-truck went up in flames, fire swelling toward the ceiling. Heat washed over him. He heard voices ahead. Human voices. Beckham's heart leapt, pulse racing.
"Timothy!" he yelled.
The sheer effort caused another coughing fit to rack his lungs, but he pushed forward against the pain and heat.
"Help! We're in here!"
someone shouted. The ceiling had caved in, but Beckham could see movement behind a few chunks of marred concrete. A few scattered, bleeding variant bodies lay nearby. Some of them burned so badly they couldn't move.
"Horn, I found Timothy," Beckham said over the radio.
He scrambled over the piles of scree on all fours like one of the monsters.
"Hell yes, that's great news,
but you better get your asses out here before the place goes up in flames.
Copy, Beckham said.
He hunched and directed his tack light into the cavity beneath the debris, illuminating an ash-covered face. Relief flooded Beckham, temporarily assuaging his burning lungs.
Timothy, are you okay? He asked.
Yes, but I'm trapped.
Beckham roved the light to reveal a few pipes had pinned his legs. Behind him, another man had an arm and shoulder trapped under a block of concrete. A grimace painted his face, blood dripping from lacerations in his scalp.
Boyd needs our help too, Timothy said.
Hang on.
Beckham used one of the pipes as a lever to push a pair of smaller concrete slabs away. They toppled away from the debris and cracked against the floor. Behind him, another explosion burst. The heat seared over his back, and the odor of burning fuel grew stronger over the smoky air. He used the pipe to lever up another concrete chunk from Timothy's leg, and a few of the other pipes trapping Timothy rolled away. The young soldier pulled his foot free with a pained grunt. Beckham held out a hand, helping Timothy stand. Another crash of falling concrete sounded nearby.
"Let's help Boyd," Timothy said.
He limped to his downed teammate. The man looked like he was barely clinging to consciousness, no doubt enduring endless waves of pain. Together, Beckham and Timothy tugged at the concrete holding Boyd in place. The man yelled in pain when they lifted it off his arm, and he reeled on the ground from the pain. Timothy lugged the bigger soldier off the ground, wrapping Boyd's good arm around his shoulder.
"Hold on, brother," Timothy said. "We're getting you out of here."
They hobbled back through the smoke and growling flames. Halfway to the exit, a blinding flash of light cut through the smoke, followed by a concussive wave that threw Beckham forward. Pieces of metal and concrete shrapnel tore through the air. His helmet thudded against the concrete, the side of his face scraping on the ground. His ears rang from the blast, and the taste of blood filled his mouth. He pushed himself up, rising to a knee. Timothy was already helping Boyd back up to his feet. Beckham lurched forward, dizzy from the blast. His ribs ached, head pounding, ears ringing. He pushed forward until he reached Timothy, and together they stumbled toward the exit. More of the ceiling and roof gave way behind them, clouds of dust rolling after them like an avalanche, fanning the flames and plumes of smoke.
"Go, go, go,"
Beckham tried to say. He couldn't even hear his own voice, but he saw their exit ahead. Horn was waving at them, and Ruckley had managed to get back to her feet. The sight filled Beckham with the energy he needed to guide Timothy and Boyd out of the blazing bay. The world still sounded muddled when they made it out into the street. Beckham thought he heard voices on the comms. Horn was yelling something, but he couldn't make that out either. A wave of smoke and dust blasted out of the loading bay, forcing the team down. Beckham coughed, trying to block Timothy with his own body as grit pelted them. When the dust settled, he saw Horn pointing at something on their six. Beckham turned, looking past the dumpster Ruckley was hiding behind. Dark silhouettes moved amid the smoke and dust. At first, Beckham couldn't tell if they were enemies or soldiers. His hearing started to return, the persistent ringing beginning to die down. He knelt behind the cover of a burned-out forklift, Horn steadying his machine gun nearby. A high-pitched clicking and shrieking dispelled any notion that these might be allies. Hot wind blew through the street, clearing the smoke momentarily. An alpha strode toward them, its bat-like ears twitching. Fire cast its body in shadows that highlighted the bulging muscles beneath its gray flesh. Behind it came a pack of juveniles and variants. Timothy leveled his pistol at the beast. Beckham tried to bring up his rifle, but the weight was almost too much to keep steady. He turned to look for an exit route, but there was nowhere to run.
"On me," Horn said.
He stepped in front of the group, his M249 centered on the pack of misshapen, diseased beasts.
"You want some of this, you motherfuckers?" he shouted. "Come and get it."
From the helicopter, the flash of gunfire below looked like lightning cutting through dark storm clouds. Dohai leaned out the side door as Tremblay brought the Black Hawk toward Kruger Drive on the south side of the Venetian. For a while, they had been unable to reach Beckham, Timothy, or Ruckley. Dohai had worried it might be too late to save them, and after Ace's death, he could not deal with another devastating loss. When Horn had finally answered on the comms, Dohai had let out a breath of relief. The rotor wash of the chopper kicked up the pillars of smoke, dispelling the dark clouds enough for Dohai to see the Alpha and its monstrous brethren rushing toward a small group of soldiers pinned up against a burning loading dock. The creatures had fanned out, some taking to nearby hills, others darting for cover.
"Take us down between the Variants and Beckham," Fitz yelled over the comm.
"Too much debris near Beckham," Tremblay called back. "But I've got a patch of street 50 yards to their east that should work. We can still block the Alpha from Beckham that way."
"Do it," Fitz replied. "Ghost, spearhead, form a perimeter and cover Beckham and the bird as they get the injured aboard."
The crew chief on the door-mounted gun began to spray rounds into any creature that made the mistake of leaving cover. Rounds suddenly pelted the helo, forcing the pilot to bank hard to the right.
"We got hostiles across the street," yelled the primary pilot.
More bullets rattled against the side of the chopper. A round caught the crew chief in the chin, taking off part of it. He slumped, falling out of the chopper to the road below.
"Get us down," Fitz shouted.
The chopper lowered to the ground as more rounds slammed into the helo, some punching through the metal. Dohai spotted one of the chimeras. The half-man hid behind a slab of asphalt. He aimed at the creature as they approached the ground. The wheels hit the street, putting the bird between where Beckham was toward their west, closer to the main strip, and the Alpha and Chimeras charging in from the east. The first Chimera's head popped up, and Dohai pulled the trigger. A burst of rounds took the top of the skull off.
"That's for Ace, you asshole."
The second Scion went down from a headshot from Fitz.
"Let's move," he screamed.
Dohai hopped out with Rico, Fitz, and Corrin. They fanned out to make a perimeter as Nielsen and Toussaint laid down covering fire, one of them jumping to the M240.
"We got more coming from the west," Horn called over the comms.
Dohai turned to see that beyond the helo, well past Beckham's position, beasts flooded in from the main strip, forcing Beckham and Horn to open fire while Timothy ran toward the helicopter with Ruckley in his arms. Another man from Recon Sigma limped after them. They were still a good 30-40 yards away. The Alpha and its brethren barreled toward the chopper from the east, racing toward the bird. At this pace, they would be there before Timothy made it with the injured soldier and Ruckley, even with Beckham and Horn trying to hold off the second pack of twisted creatures. The Alpha pushed past a few of the dead monsters, smashing them as it ran over their bodies. A few bullets caught the monster, tearing through its muscle. But it didn't let the rounds stop it.
"Use the M240, Dohai yelled into the comm.
Toussaint turned the weapon on the beast. A few rounds lanced out from the machine gun, but the weapon jammed. Dohai cursed and aimed for the head of the Alpha. It ducked away, vanishing in a cloud of drifting smoke. He let his rifle fall on its strap, whipping out his hatchet in one hand and his knife in the other. Images of Ace's beheaded body smacking against the rooftop flashed through his mind. He let out a primal war cry to match the Alpha's. Corrin followed, gripping his cutlass in both clawed hands. A Variant burst through the smoke, and he took off its head with a swift stroke like he was swinging for a home run. Dohai sliced at another thrall that burst from the smoke, maw snapping at his blade. He hit it in the skull with the back end of his hatchet, cracking open its head like an egg. The Alpha kept to the barrier of smoke. It fell to all fours, waiting to strike. As Corrin distracted the smaller Variants, Dohai ran at the Alpha with the blades up over his head. The creature burst out to meet him, striking at his chest. He dodged the attack and cleaved a patch of thick muscle from the beast's shoulder. The Alpha swung again, hitting Dohai in the chest and knocking him back. Gunfire slashed out around them, piercing the flanks of the other Variants. The Alpha reared back, rising to its full height like a grizzly bear. Dohai dodged under another series of blows, striking out with his weapons, cutting at the barreled leg muscles. Smoke stung his nostrils, making his eyes water. He blinked past it, desperate to keep his focus on the gigantic abomination. Every other sound seemed to fade away except for the growls and roars of the Alpha. Thoughts of Ace, Lincoln, Mendez, and all the lives torn apart by the monsters fueled him. Attack after attack, he dodged, then parried and counter-striked. Dohai hunched beneath slicing claws and lashed out at the beast's ankle, cutting deep into the tendon. The monster crumpled to one knee, letting out a cry of agony. Its milky white eyes flitted up as if it was trying to see as its bat-like ears crinkled. Another series of clicks escaped its mouth as he prepared for the finishing blow. But as he brought his hatchet up, the monster surged forward, slamming into his body. He flew backward, crashing violently into a charcoaled car. Pain throbbed through his body, but he ignored it, propelled by the mental pain of his lost brothers and sisters. He moved as the creature got up on both legs, grunting in agony. It sliced at him, but he was much faster this time. He bolted away and then circled, lashing out with his knife and hatchet to cut the creature across its side and back. Spinning toward him, he seized on the perfect opportunity, jabbing the knife into an eye. The orb popped so loud he could hear it over the gunfire. He brought the hatchet down with all his strength on the skull, splitting the bone. The monster reeled backward, collapsing, but still struggling. Dohai tugged the hatchet and knife out, then struck out again and again. Hot blood sprayed over his face. The creature groaned, and its limbs finally stopped twitching. Voices called his name, but he ignored them. He continued to carve the beast until he felt a hand grab his shoulder. He held up his blood-soaked blades, ready to strike the chimera that had stopped his attack.
"Come on," Corin said, voice crackling. "We need to leave."
Dohai looked up to see the Blackhawk was finally loaded up. He and Corin ran back to the bird. Corin had laid waste to several of the thralls with his cutlass, and the other soldiers had taken down the rest of the pack with bullets. Dozens of gray corpses lay in the street and in the loading bay area. Another wave of hungry variants rushed down the street, chasing Dohai and Corin back toward the helicopter. As soon as they were inside, it lifted. But several of the beasts were close enough to leap into the air, claws extended. Another pack had charged in from the east, and three jumped into the opposite open door of the chopper before Beckham could get it closed. One of them lunged at the injured man from Recon Sigma. Timothy aimed his pistol at the beast, shooting it, until the monster tumbled backward, falling back. Dohai threw his hatchet, hitting one of them in the chest. The third pounced on Ruckley.
"Hell no,"
Horn rumbled. He grabbed the creature by the back of the neck and yanked it off, then slammed its head into the deck, over and over, until it caved in. He tossed the limp body out of the chopper. Fitz closed the side door, sealing out the shrieks and sporadic gunfire as the helo rose past the swirling smoke. Dohai sucked in breath after breath. He finally crashed on the blood-soaked deck. Across from him, Horn leaned down to check Ruckley, while Rico and Fitz tended to the other man on Recon Sigma, whose name tape read Boyd. Corin wiped his cutlass over his pant leg, eyes locked on Dohai.
"Are you okay?"
Dohai nodded, trying to speak, his throat scratching, still raw from the smoke.
"I'm sorry about Ace. He stuck his neck out for me, even when no one else trusted me," Corin continued. "I won't forget him." "None of us will," Dohai said.
17. Azrael looked out over his head. The sun peeked over the mountainous horizon, red and orange light bleeding across the sky. It had been a full day since the victories in Las Vegas and Puerto Rico. Much of his fleet was escorting the ships they had captured there, preparing for their next battle, as they headed west into the Gulf of Mexico. The collaborators he had acquired over the years with adequate knowledge of operating the vessels were supplemented by those new prisoners they had enslaved and forced into service through the promise of brutal torture to them and their families. He had only recently flown back to his lab on one of the civilian model planes they had commandeered from the forces they had defeated on the island, and he was anxious for the next step of his plan. But before he could proceed, he waited for the return of Elijah and the rest of his forces from Las Vegas. They had spent the previous day ensuring there were no lingering survivors and taking multitudes of prisoners, who Azrael hoped would fuel the new gods in their final campaign. Soon the entire allied states would be nothing but smoldering ashes. Ringgold would bow to his power when he gave her one final choice. join them, or die. He leaned against the railing on the terrace of a building that served as his communication center. From his perch, he had a clear view of the mountains and all the roads leading up to his base. This was where his empire had begun. To the casual observer, the facilities and warehouses around him appeared no different than they had during the First War. Like the human loyalist base at Mount Katahdin in Maine, he ensured that everything was carefully camouflaged, keeping the important facilities out of sight and surveillance for as long as possible. So far, it had worked. The heretics may have infiltrated smaller satellite bases around his kingdom, but they hadn't found this stronghold. This holy place was where he had first worked to help the United States, back when he thought he was developing a cure like Dr. Kate Lovato for the X9H9 virus plaguing the country. But fate had other plans. Azrael had unwittingly fulfilled the true mission behind the VX-99 program. The Scions were the perfect predator and soldier. He had started a new world order, rising from the ashes of humanity's self-destruction. The fiery orange and red sunrise of dawn melted away to clear blue skies. Black specks appeared over the western horizon, growing larger. Azrael drew in a deep breath of warm air. These were the first of his faithful legions returning from Las Vegas. He took the stairs down from the terrace and strode between the spread of white and tan buildings stretching between parking lots. Voices called out from Scions commanding groups of chained human prisoners as they lugged crates full of ammunition and fuel into a warehouse. These were the slaves healthy enough to be of service to the new gods, but stubborn enough that they would not serve loyally. They would be put to use until their bodies gave out, and then they would be plastered in the webbing network permanently, nutrition flowing from their meat to feed the growing network of masterminds and other godly creations. Among the slaves were a few Scions, or members of the Fallen, as Azrael liked to call them. Those were creatures that had shown disloyalty. He had given them the gift of joining the ranks of the new gods, and they had squandered it. They were the flawed part of his creation. Soon, the new batches would be completely indoctrinated. Anger flashed through his augmented body as he observed the Fallen hoisting crates into the back of a truck. "Quicker!" the Scion said. A female Scion with long, wiry hair draping over her bony shoulders snarled at him. "Screw you, monster." The faithful Scion struck the female Fallen with an electric cattle prod.
"Kill this small-minded beast if she disobeys you again," Azrael said.
"Yes, Prophet," the Scion said.
He struck out at the Fallen with the cattle prod again. The Fallen writhed in pain, but didn't let it stop her from snarling at Azrael.
"We chose you, and yet you spurn us."
Azrael placed a foot on her sternum, pressing down so she struggled to breathe.
"You have been gifted so much. Why do you waste it? Why do you cling to your silly notions of humanity?"
He leaned in toward her, baring his fangs.
"Your side has already lost."
With that, he slashed at her face, leaving crimson tears in her flesh, then kicked her away. Satisfied, Azrael turned and continued toward an expansive parking lot. The buzz of the cattle prod and an anguished cry sounded from behind him again. He relished in the female's pain. Guards stood sentry at the parking lot. They bowed at Azrael's approach, then turned back toward the surrounding terrain for any threats. A squadron of helicopters drew close. Among them were a few civilian models, in addition to a Black Hawk and a Little Bird. The Black Hawk hit the ground first, and the side door slid open. Human loyalists readied their camouflage netting and tents to conceal the choppers as a group of Scions poured out. Blood covered their clothes and stained the cutlasses strapped over their backs. They strode toward Azrael, pride evident in each marching footstep, but they kept their eyes low out of respect for him. He stood there, watching, his cloak flapping behind him in the wind. He could smell the scent of death lingering over the loyal Scions as they knelt on the pavement. The final Scion left the troop hold of the Black Hawk. He carried something roughly the size of a soccer ball, wrapped in an olive shemagh scarf, mottled with dark stains.
Elijah, Azrael said as the scion approached. We've returned to serve, Prophet, Elijah said, dropping to one knee, his tattered cape falling over his battered body. Rise.
Elijah stood, the object still cradled under his left arm. Bandages covered his limbs and several spots on his torso. Dried blood had soaked through them. He kept his head bowed, blood dripping past the broken human skull mask he wore.
I brought something back for you, Master. Show me.
Elijah let the shemagh scarf fall, then gripped a human head. The long white and gray beard was tangled and matted in dried blood.
Who's this? Azrael asked. A member of Team Ghost.
Elijah dropped the head, then fell to his knees again.
Prophet, I failed you. This is not one of the men you requested. I lost many of my soldiers to a sacrilegious fallen scion that was with Team Ghost, and—
Quiet, Azrael said calmly. He reached toward Elijah, placing his claws under the soft flesh of his skin.
Look at me.
Elijah glanced up with golden eyes.
Prophet, I beg your forgiveness. Give me an honorable death and cleanse me of my failure.
Azrael stood and stepped away from Elijah, considering his fate. He appreciated the loyalty of the scion, and the fact he had actually killed one of the elusive members of Team Ghost, not to mention the trap was a success.
You brought back something the others before you could not, he said. This will strike fear in their numbers to see yet another of their heroes dead. I will kill those that remain, Master. I swear it.
Azrael motioned for him to stand.
You have proven yourself faithful.
Elijah rose as scions and human loyalists began to lead military prisoners away from the birds. The fresh meat shuffled along, together with ropes.
Very good,
Azrael said, unable to stop from grinning.
One of these wretched beings is bound to tell us where we can find Ringgold. There are only so many outposts left in the Allied States, after all.
That was what I had hoped, too, Elijah said.
Azrael gestured to Eliza, then the rest of the scions assembled before him.
Go treat your wounds, then begin the interrogations.
He locked eyes with Elijah again.
Then once we have the intel we need, you'll have your chance at redemption. Team Ghost will be yours.
President Ringgold sat next to Chief of Staff Soprano in the EOC at the Harbor House Hotel in Galveston. Generals Cornelius and Souza, along with General Vance and Colonel Stilwell from Canada and General Hernandez from Mexico, were seated around the conference table. Comms officers surveyed the computers lining one of the walls. The Las Vegas mission had been an abject failure, and they had been reorganizing their defenses since the survivors had returned, but their failure had not been limited to Sin City. We still haven't heard anything from Lemke, have we? Ringgold asked.
Nothing, Souza said. The last transmission we received from Puerto Rico was when the USS George Johnson reported being overrun by variants. Since then, it's been quiet. They could have repositioned to another island, Souza suggested. They're probably maintaining radio silence to prevent the new gods from finding them.
Lemke's a smart man, Ringgold said, trying to reassure herself as much as the others. He'll have found a way to survive.
Cornelius nodded. I hope so.
How about Los Alamos? Ringgold asked. She had kept the science team's report about Orgo Proct and Charles Morgan close at hand, wondering if they had been right. That maybe the new gods were based in New Mexico instead of Nevada after all.
You can see the latest images we took of Los Alamos, Souza said, showing the National Laboratory. We haven't seen any signs of activity there. It looks just as it did when it fell during the Great War.
Ringgold withheld the curses, begging to be let out.
Then where in the hell is this prophet?
How are these monsters spying on us and we can't even figure out where they're keeping all their forces?
No one answered.
Madam President, one of the younger comms officers said, his voice excited. I'm getting an incoming transmission. It seems to be coming from a computer that belongs to the CENTCOM facilities.
From Puerto Rico? Ringgold asked.
I'm not sure, he said. It's on our encrypted lines with the right machine ID, but I can't geolocate the signal.
Put it through.
The comms officer accepted the transmission.
It's a video.
Let's see, Ringgold said. The video replaced the views from the flyover. It showed an auditorium with red webbing stretched over the seating. Two hulking masterminds were positioned on either side of the stage. Between them was what looked to be a throne made of red organic webbing.
What in the hell is this? Ringgold asked.
I don't know, the comms officer said. But I do know this is a recording. That's all I can say for sure. A figure strode to the center of the stage wearing a dark cloak. His fingers ended in hooked claws, and his face was a patchwork of scars. His nostrils were little more than slits above his wormy lips and pointed teeth. When his golden eyes locked onto the camera, a chill snaked down Ringgold's spine. She could almost sense the creature's intelligence seeping through the image on the screen.
That's a chimera, General Vance said.
The beast sat on his throne, clawed fingers clenching into the red vines of its armrest.
This message is for President Jan Ringgold, the chimera said in a gravelly voice. I am Prophet Azrael, the leader of the new gods you have failed to defeat.
Ringgold stared at her mortal enemy. Evil radiated from the eyes of the monstrosity. He was responsible for so much death and devastation.
Las Vegas was not your only loss last night, Azrael continued. Your foolish attempts to establish a foothold in Puerto Rico were an absolute disgrace. We took the island from your pitiful forces in a matter of hours. I want to show you just how easy that was for us.
The video went black before coming back online to a view of the streets of Old San Juan. Once colorful buildings with colonial architecture were pocked with bullet holes. The camera followed a group of collaborators who were advancing through the streets trailing a pack of Thrall variants. Sporadic gunfire sounded in the distance. The monsters surged forward, pouncing through windows and doorways. Some pulled human soldiers out of buildings, tearing the poor souls apart or dragging them away. The camera view shifted to another angle. Three helicopters soared above the collaborators, spitting gunfire into the Thrall variants. Suddenly, light flared from neighboring buildings. Law rockets punched into the choppers. They exploded and spun out of control, slamming into buildings and the street. The video showed other equally horrifying scenes. More small sea craft drawing close to the San Juan port, unloading monsters and collaborators that overwhelmed the Allied States' vessels docked there. Variants with webbed hands and feet emerged from the waves, scaling the sides of Allied States naval vessels. Ringgold had prayed that Vice President Lemke and the First Fleet had somehow survived, that maybe Sousa was right, and they were hiding out now, biding their time. But the silence from Puerto Rico had inspired all manner of nightmarish thoughts. This video showed those thoughts were accurate. After what seemed like an agonizing eternity, the video switched back to Azrael. This time, a line of scions stood on the stage with him. One scion with a broken human skull as a mask held a hostage who wore a black cloth hood tied over his head.
The weapons your government created started this, and I will finish it, Azrael said.
With a snap of his clawed hands, the chimera with the macabre mask tore off the hood from the hostage's head. Ringgold gasped at the sight of her vice president.
Son of a bitch, Cornelia said, bawling his fists. Bruised and beaten, Lemke stood on the stage next to the chimera. His hands were tied together by a rope, and another cloth was pressed into his mouth as a gag. Blood dripped from cuts along the side of his face. Azrael stood from his throne and strode to Lemke's side. He used one claw to slowly peel away the flesh along one of his arms. Lemke yelled in agony, his cries distorted by the cloth in his mouth. The chimera guarding him held him upright, preventing him from backing away as Azrael flayed the man alive. Ringgold wanted to look away, but she couldn't bring herself to do so. Part of her kept hoping that Team Ghost would show up and save him. This was no old action movie, though. There was no saving him from these abominations. Azrael turned toward the camera.
I am pleased for you to witness the pain I can inflict. This is just a glimpse at what is to come, he said. All because you have arrogantly tried to dethrone me. You heretics must learn. We will not hesitate to punish each and every one of your insolent followers.
He tore the gag from Lemke's mouth.
Don't give in to this filthy bastard, Lemke said.
Azrael used a claw to cut off one of his ears, then threw the piece of flesh and cartilage into the air, catching it with his teeth and eating it. Ringgold looked away, tears streaming down her cheeks. The vice president let out a long wail, and she turned back, eyes narrowed, to see his intestines slopping out onto the stage. The chimera behind Lemke let the vice president collapse to the floor. Azrael pressed his boot against Lemke's neck, preventing him from breathing.
You have tried and failed to stand against me, Azrael said, and still I am willing to show you some mercy. Abdicate. Release your tyrannical hold on your country. Then I will consider some of your people to be among my chosen to be elevated as scions.
Azrael took his foot off Lemke. The vice president gasped for breath. A nearby chimera handed him a cutlass.
Or, if you do not submit, then understand that we will destroy you and what's left of your country.
Azrael aimed the cutlass at the vice president.
No, Lemke said, voice rasping.
Don't submit.
Azrael swung the cutlass down, separating his head from his body.
You have 3 days to decide, Azrael said.
The video ended. General Souza bowed his head. Ringgold shivered, unable to contain the emotion boiling inside her. Soprano put a hand on her back.
I'm sorry, he said. I'm so sorry. This isn't your fault, Souza said.
Ringgold shook away the shock, wiped at her tears, and looked at the team.
What do we do now? She asked. Should I?
She didn't want to bring herself to say it, but she was no longer sure about their future.
Do we surrender?
Vance asked, completing the question she was afraid to voice aloud.
No. Hell no, Cornelius said. If we do, that son of a bitch will kill every one of us and enslave our families.
Slavery is worse than death, Soprano said. After Puerto Rico, Vegas, your entire country. You think we can actually win at any point in the future?
Asked General Vance.
That thing is too powerful now.
What choice do we have? Souza said.
He gave us a choice, Vance replied.
Hernandez snapped out of his shock and slammed his fist on the table.
I would die before I become a creature like him. You ask my people, and they will tell you the same.
All eyes turned toward Ringgold. She fought to control herself and push the images of Lemke's horrific death from her mind. There was only one way forward. Giving in to the new gods, as Lemke had said in that video, was not an option.
You should not have to ask me.
She stifled the sobs, threatening to overtake her.
I spent a few years in New Hampshire.
You know the motto.
Live free or die, Cornelia said. I'm with you, Madam President.
In 3 days I will defend Galveston by myself if that's what it takes, Ringgold said, speaking as clearly as she could, stymieing the tide of grief building inside her. If any of you want to submit to him, know that you've made yourself our enemy. Otherwise, in 3 days, we'll stand right here on this soil and fight.
One by one, the others nodded in agreement.
Notify Commander Jacobs immediately to recall all operations from Houston, consolidating them here in Galveston, Ringgold said. We need everything we've got in one location. That includes ensuring every single person who can lift a gun. Everyone must help to defend this base, no exceptions.
We'll get the message out, General Sousa said.
That includes me, Ringgold said. It's been a long time since I've fired a weapon, but General Cornelius, I was hoping you could give me a refresher.
Absolutely, Madam President, he replied.
Good. I'll begin preparing our forces, Cornelius said.
Hernandez started to stand.
I will request reinforcements immediately. We cannot sit idly by while one of our closest military and economic partners is destroyed by this beast and his monsters.
Thank you, Ringgold said. She looked to General Vance. Are you ready to send those 1,000 troops your country initially promised to?
Please understand that's out of my control. But I think this latest video will serve to change a lot of minds up north.
Thank you, Ringgold said. For those doubting we can win, remember this. Our enemy believes they are gods, but they bleed and feel pain. And they'll soon learn they're mortal like the rest of us.
18. Kate wrinkled her nose at the smell of rot and death wafting around her when she entered the parking garage beneath the hospital outside of Outpost Houston. Banks of lights illuminated the tunnel plastered with red webbing. Commander Jacobs had doubled the number of men down here since President Ringgold had sent word that an attack on Galveston was imminent. Kate didn't feel any better with the increased troops. The video from Azrael's throne room continued to haunt her. This monster had single-handedly brought the Allied States to its knees, and his forces only seemed to grow stronger by the day. At least she wouldn't be stuck in this hellhole for much longer. As the president withdrew their defenses from Houston, she had requested the science team return as soon as possible with them. The team would have to abandon their efforts outside the tunnel and figure out a new way to help the war efforts, all in the matter of 3 days. Kate wasn't sure how they could accomplish anything of scientific merit in that short amount of time. A cry of pain distracted her from her thoughts, and Kate turned away from the tunnel. Leslie jerked in the chair near the tunnel where she was tapped into the network, her eyes closed. Ron and Sammy stood nearby, watching the computer.
Anything useful before we pack up to leave? Kate asked Sammy. Sammy squinted at the monitor, scanning the spikes of communication signals she had intercepted.
Everything is gibberish.
They knew the whole time we were listening, and they used it against us, Kate said. We missed the scouts they sent all around the country. We missed the attacks on Puerto Rico, and we still don't know for certain if the Prophet is Charles Morgan and if he is at Los Alamos. But we do know they are coming after us again, only because they told us. Ron lowered his head and rubbed his eyes. She could tell the researcher was exhausted and scared. She didn't blame him. Fear was a constant companion in all their lives. Part of her just wanted to give up and spend the last few days with her family. But so long as they still lived and she had a chance of saving them, she could not give up.
Sammy, is there any hope you can follow their communication signals again? Kate asked. They've re-encrypted everything. How long would it take for you to decode?
Days. Maybe a week. Maybe longer, even with the software we've got.
We don't have a week, we've got 3 days.
I know, but... Sammy slapped the desk.
It's okay.
Kate put a hand on the young woman.
Just breathe. We can figure something out if we work together.
Leslie cried out again, drawing stares from several soldiers.
Should I disconnect her? Ron asked.
Not yet, Kate said. I need to know more about this new encryption before we head back to Galveston.